The recording has started. This is Joanna, and today we are going to continue our module on visioning and strategizing. And last week we started off with the first call in the module where we looked at visioning and different aspects of visioning, and today we're going to move into looking specifically at tools for strategizing and also what I call the energetics of new things. And I'll explain what all of that is in a couple of minutes, but before we get there, I did want to spend just a few minutes bridging between our visioning call from last week and then all of, you know, what we're going to be moving into today. So I wanted to kind of back into visioning just for a little bit. I think it'll be helpful and valuable. And there are a couple of pieces that I wanted to share. A number of these pieces came up through, you know, things that you guys are commenting on and posting in the Facebook group, questions that you're asking me. I'm so grateful that, you know, you're asking questions and bringing new pieces in. That's really part of the just beauty and power of this. You know, I can't be so exhaustive and get into all the nooks and crannies. So the more that you share with me around where your questions are, you know, the more I can really serve exactly what you need. So there are a couple of pieces I wanted to just kind of back into when it came to visioning. The first is, I'll probably talk about this more later in the training, but I think it's a good place to just share about this right now. What I have really seen over just so many years of coaching and facilitating and, you know, working with transformation both in myself and in others is that if you are really determined and desire to co-create transformation with others, it's really important to consider what I call the four levels of learning and transformation. And I just want to go through them briefly and then explain how it relates to visioning. So most coaches tend to just think about one level of learning and transformation, the most obvious one, which is the intellectual level or the mental level. And we need that. That is definitely one level of learning that is required for transformation, having an intellectual understanding of things, having mental awareness of things, right? Absolutely. But in Sacred Depths coaching, we go further and deeper than that, and we know that there are actually three other levels that are also required to get to that full and long-lasting learning, long-lasting transformation. So after the mental or intellectual level, the next level is the heart level, right, which is about learning through our emotions, through connecting to our emotions, connecting to our heart, connecting to our love, connecting to how we feel. The next level or layer after that is the spiritual level. And this is whether, you know, when I say spiritual, I don't mean prescribing to a particular religion or even spiritual belief necessarily. But what I mean by that is what I've just really seen as one of the vital components of being able to learn and transform is not only to understand it on an intellectual level and not only to connect with it on an emotional level, but to understand that there's a higher, whatever your definition of higher wisdom or higher guidance, you know, it could be your own inner wisdom or intuition even, not necessarily God or spirit per se, but when you can support your clients to connect in to that bigger picture, that higher wisdom, then they feel that they're being guided. They feel that they're being held. They feel that there's a pathway of deeper wisdom that's beckoning them along, and they're much more easily going to transform in the ways that you're working together. And then the fourth level is about the body, right? The more that we can make, I like to call it making a body memory of a new experience, a new feeling, a new energy, a new archetype, a new belief, the more that we can really root that in to our body understanding, then the more likely it's going to stick with us. Generally, I'll move clients through the four levels in the order that I just described them, but sometimes, you know, I'll kind of move them around. Anyway, we could get into a whole discussion about that, but the reason why we won't, but the reason why I'm just bringing it up in the context of visioning is that, you know, we just touched upon this a little bit last week. You know, there's more than one way to vision. So one way is through conversation, right? Just regular coaching dialogue, which, you know, activates mostly that mental awareness. It can activate some of the other levels and layers as well. But, you know, a lot about talking, dialogue, just regular dialogue, is a lot that mental or intellectual realm. So that's why when you're visioning with clients, I highly encourage you to ask them, how does this feel, right? Because that then helps them connect both with the heart, that emotional level and layer, as well as the body, right? How does it feel in the body? I encourage you to ask them, you know, what's the bigger, what's the higher wisdom here? You know, what is the universe, where's the universe guiding you here? That helps connect in to that spiritual level. But then there are other ways to, even beyond that, to be thinking about visioning. For example, instead of having a conversation as a visioning exercise, you can lead your client through a visualization. That will tap into some of the different layers and levels and also just inner wisdom and desire in a different way. Or creating a vision board. Someone brought up in the Facebook group, right? That taps in to the physical, the body level, because you're physically doing something, right? It might tap into the heart level because you have an emotional resonance with an image that you see, etc. Having some kind of ritual to create the vision. Right, so I just wanted to kind of broaden and open up your thoughts and ideas on how you vision with clients. And of course, you know, we're all different individuals, and therefore we're all different practitioners. You know, for some of you on this call, ritual is just not what you're going to be doing, right? You just don't resonate with it. I'm trained as a ritualist, so, you know, for me, you know, ritual is a big part of things, but it's okay. Like, you know, I'm just giving you different ideas to see what resonates with you. Okay, so that's the first piece that I wanted to mention around visioning. The second piece that I wanted to just back into a little bit is to emphasize, we looked at this last week, but I really want to emphasize this as you practice your visioning with your partners and with your clients out in the world, even with yourself. I want to remind you about the stretch, risk, or die. Remember, we spoke about that last week. And what I want to remind you about it is that the understanding of the stretch, risk, or die and using that exercise is all about supporting clients out of their comfort zones. So again, my coaching philosophy, or Sacred Depths coaching philosophy, this is not every coaching philosophy, but I really think it probably encompasses most coaching philosophies out there, schools of thought, is that one of the reasons, one of the purposes of a coach is to support our clients out of their comfort zone and to the biggest vision for themselves. So I want to encourage you, as you're working on visioning with clients, to be asking, like, is this just kind of the mundane, easy, comfortable for them, even if they haven't done it before? Is it, you know, they're in their comfort zone here? And if so, is there something bigger that they can stretch into here? We never want it to be a die. And there are moments for us to be in our comfort zones in our lives, for sure. It's not always stretch, you know, constant stretch. That would be exhausting, right? But is this a moment for my client to stretch? And is my client stretching? And, you know, there's some, if you're visioning with a client and you sense that what they're envisioning is a little bit in their comfort zone, they're really playing it safe, and that the vision is not reflective of their highest potential and highest desire, then you want to ask them some questions, right? So here are just a couple of examples of questions you could ask in that scenario. Number one, what if your vision were 100 times deeper than what you're sharing right now? What would that look like? You know, just for fun, right, in case their resistances and their fears come up, like just for fun, just go with me here for a moment. You know, if 100 times is too big, you can say 10 times. What if your vision were 100 times bigger than what you're sharing right now, than what you're articulating right now? What would that look like? Or here's another great question, and a fun one that you can ask if you feel that your client is a little bit in their comfort zone. If you added one outrageous element to this vision, what would it be? If you added one outrageous element to this vision, what would that be? All right, I wanted to address two other pieces that came up in the Facebook group around visioning, and then I'll open up just for checking in around visioning and questions. So next piece is there is a question in the Facebook group around, you know, so what if you're visioning with a client and they've got lots of different ideas, like they're all over the place with their ideas. You know, what do you do if that happens? Well, first of all, you want to create awareness around it, right? And let the client know, you know, these are a lot of ideas. And, you know, we need to kind of like organize these ideas or prioritize or, you know, whatever it is. So, but I want you to understand a piece of human behavior if this comes up. When you have a client that has a lot of different ideas and they want to do all of the different ideas, you can feel it when you're talking to a client. It's like they want to do everything all at once. What that's often about is that it's just very common for human beings to have a fear of not getting it all done. Like they have, you know, a list of expectations for themselves, of desires for themselves, of visions for themselves. And sometimes if you can say, okay, you know, there's a lot here, let's decide on the next thing. If you go into that without understanding this fear that people have, they can go into resistance, right? They can end up feeling like, oh, you don't understand them, you're keeping them small, they want to fight against it and do 20 things at once, you know, all of that. So you want to just, you know, have that understanding that sometimes people have this fear of not getting it all done at once, and that part of your job as a coach is to create awareness around the fact that that they can, right? That they can accomplish their goals, but that oftentimes the most effective way to create what they want is to prioritize and to go step by step by step. So you want to create awareness around time, awareness around productivity. And of course, sometimes there are situations where it's absolutely appropriate to be doing a couple things at once. In order to prioritize, you want to look, you know, if somebody's got a lot of different things going on, you want to look at a couple of different things. Number one, ego versus desire. We spoke about that last week. I won't review that today, right? But, like, are there any shoulds in this long list of things that they want to do versus what they really want to do? The other thing you want to look at is how do each of these items fit in with their end goal or their highest vision? And the ones that, like, really fit in the most, right, those may become higher priority. And then the other thing you want to look at are what are the resources that this client has, because that may dictate the order of how they do things. And that's getting into strategy also a little bit, right? So you want to be thinking about all of that. And then last piece, there was a question about how do you introduce visioning to a client who hasn't asked for it. So the way that you introduce visioning to a client who hasn't necessarily asked to vision is to create awareness around the purpose of visioning and the importance of visioning, and to share that it's your job as their coach to support them in having and working towards the highest vision for themselves. And to also maybe create awareness around what we looked at last week, around how sometimes we don't allow ourselves to vision and why, and then asking if that's something that they would like to do, right? Okay. So I wanted to make sure I covered those points. And let me just open up for Q&A. I know I went through a lot quickly. Any questions on anything I just shared or anything that has come up for you this week as you've been working on visioning either with your partners or for yourself, or just any revelations or understandings that or celebrations that feel valuable to share around visioning? Star two. All right. Who is this from California, 3228?
Hey, Joanna, it's Carolyn.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Two things. The visioning was incredible with my partner. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting. She and I shared our visioning through email. I got hers. I tried to send mine out couple times and it wouldn't go out. I thought, okay, apparently maybe I'm just too detailed in my visioning. So by the time I redid it, it's still too detailed. So I'm going to kind of take it a little bit further up so it's not too detailed. So I noticed that maybe I just do too many steps in visioning as opposed to being a little more freer. It felt really constricted to write things out. It was like, oh my God, I'm not going to get this right.
Interesting. I'm so glad you're bringing that up. Some of what we look at in strategizing today may actually take care of that.
Okay.
What often happens is we can create these beautiful visions, and then the next place we go to is the how, right? It's like, how is that going to happen? And that's where we can tend to if we haven't self-sabotaged in the visioning portion, we can start right after that. And this is something that I'll share with you, I tell my clients all the time, particularly when we are starting out, with like a new vision and working mm-hmm. on it or a new idea, mm-hmm. focus less on the how and more on the commitment. We'll talk a little
bit. Oh, I like that.
Today.
Okay.
Right? The how mm-hmm. will come. Usually the monkey mind is trying to stop you by telling you there are all these little details and I don't know how, right? It's the commitment
right.
you want to be focusing on.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, great.
I like that.
Good. I'm so glad you put that forward.
Well, good. Well, then the second thing is I'm getting together with two of my good friends, and we're going to do a vision board. I've already started one, and they're going to start one. I have one friend, she goes, you're able to finish one in the 2 hours we sit and do it? I'm like, yeah, because I don't think about it. I just pull it, and then I paste it on there. I just go with what feels right in the magazines I'm pulling up, the words that are coming up, whatever else. She goes, I never finish them. So how do you walk someone through, you know, in 2 hours? Just pull it, put pieces together, because she'll wait, and then she never gets it done.
Yeah.
Ever. So how can we move through that so that then she's not just wallowing?
Yeah. It's such a great question. So part of it may just be logistics. Right? Sometimes it takes me more than 2 hours to do a vision board. So it might be that it needs more time and space. It might be that it needs two sittings. Like the first 2 hour sitting is about pulling, and then you just kind of like meditate on the images, sit on them for a week, and then come together and create it.
Okay.
Or it might just be, you know, create more time and space. And then the other logistical piece, you know, if you just want the 2 hours, you know, I'd say like the other logistical piece is like, okay, first hour we're pulling and second hour we're pasting and really create a stronger container around that.
Okay.
And then if it feels, you know, it may or may not be deeper than the logistics. So you'll sense into it, but if you sense that it is deeper than the logistics, then, well, let me ask you, instead of feeding it to you, so what would be a really good question to ask your friend?
So I guess the next question is, because we've done this several years in a row, so she never finishes it. So the question I guess I would ask her is, what are you making this out to be? The other question would be, what's stopping you? Does it have to be perfect? Because a lot of times for her, it has to be perfect. And I'm like,
I don't know. I love all those questions.
That's what comes up. Okay.
Yeah. So it might be to look there.
Okay.
Okay, great.
I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. I'm going to keep on going. If there are more questions on visioning, we can get to them at the end of our call today, but I want to move into strategizing. And before we get to the how to strategize, like what are the nuts and bolts of strategizing? It's really important, in my experience, it's been really important to, the best way to get to the how is to first understand the human behavior behind what I like to call the energetics of new things. So we're going to look there first and then get to the nuts and bolts of strategizing. The two really go together. Okay, so what do I mean by the energetics of new things? Well, any new thing that your client is working on, any new relationship, any new marketing strategy, working towards manifesting a new home, a new way of being in the world, a new commitment, a new offering or program, a new creative project or any project, anything that your client is working on, or even if it's not new, the energetics of new things can also come into like they've been working on it for a while and it hasn't worked and now it needs a new strategy to work, right? So we'll categorize all of that under new things, right? Anything that you're going to be doing visioning around with your clients. Any new thing has a distinct energy. New things have distinct energy that require something different than old things, but things that you've been working on that have been in maintenance for a while. that, you know, you're still growing, but you've been growing for a while. New things have distinct energy. And the more, as a practitioner, that you can understand the energy of new things and how human beings respond to this concept of doing something new, then the better you'll be able to help navigate clients through all these new things that we're talking about and all of those visions, right? So a big part of sacred depths, as you've already seen, is actually being able to understand or to have the wisdom on the human behavior so that you can spot what's happening for your clients and also see where obstacles may arise before they even arise. A really big mistake that you can make as a coach is to treat taking action on a new project to treat that in the same way that you would treat taking action on a continuing or ongoing project that has already begun to come into fruition. If you treat it the same way, oftentimes you'll see that resistance or obstacles happen. Your client may not actually get started on this new thing, or they may start and then stop, or things will get confusing or held up or convoluted when you go to strategize around it. So let's get a little bit of an understanding of this new thing. I'm not going to go too deeply into this. It's something that I do. We go into really deeply. We explore a lot in the facilitator training. But I do want to talk a little bit explore a little bit around cycles. So what I have seen, what I have observed, is that any project that we work on, whether it's an outer project like a business or a business plan, or manifesting a new home, as well as any inner project that we work on, building more confidence or trust or whatever it is, anything that we work on runs in cycles. And the cycle that any project works on mirrors very much the cycles in nature. And when we look at the cycles in nature, there are generally four phases. They run in a cycle, so it's not that there's a first phase, but they do go in an order. And just for ease sake, I'll start with the spring, right? So one phase of a cycle of any project is what spring represents, or what the morning, spring and the morning, can be correlated together, right? This is the phase of new things. This is, think about spring energy. You know, there's a burst of energy. We've been like in that winter phase and the quiet and the wrapped up for long, and then all of a sudden there are these bright colors and the days are starting to get longer and there's new energy. It's a moment of rebirth. Right? It's like there's bursts of energy coming, you know, awakenings coming. Think about the maiden who's so curious about new things. The maiden is in that first phase. Then from there, we move into the summer, and summer energy can be correlated with high noon energy. You know, also kind of new moon is a lot spring energy. And so, you know, if we think about the cycle of the month, the growth period, the summer period is as the moon is moving towards full, right? And the summer phase is all about growth. So if the spring is about planting, initiation, newness, new energy, summer is about watering. Continue to make sure that those seeds that you planted are growing. It's about making sure they get sunlight. It's about nurturing them, getting them water, right? That persistent and consistent action over and over that it takes to nurture something and to help it grow. From there, we move into autumn. That can be correlated to, you know, that time, that late afternoon time when things are starting to move, you know, it's getting a little darker, that sort of thing. And that phase, that autumn phase, is very much about harvest, right? We've planted our seeds, we've watered our seeds, we've grown and nurtured, you know, and now we have these fruits that have grown. And the autumn, just like towards the end of the day, you know, it's about appreciating what's been accomplished, what's been grown, what's been created, and really enjoying it. And then, of course, that last phase is that winter phase, the dark of night. It's so much about releasing what no longer serves in order to prepare for the next cycle. So why am I sharing all of this with you? To illustrate that when we start something new, we want our clients to have some of that spring energy. That's, you know, they need some of that burst of energy, that excitement, that feeling of rebirth, that curiosity to get something new going. Once they get it going, then we can move into that more summer energy of the growth and the persistent and the consistent. And, you know, like the, think about like, you know, the pregnant woman who's just like nurturing her body, waiting day after day, you know, working, you know, then we can move into that. But when we start something new, we want that new energy there. I mean, we want excitement throughout when it's needed to grow things. But so here's the thing, is that the problem that can oftentimes happen is that clients won't necessarily be feeling that spring energy at first. It's really incredible when they are, you know, like when you have a client and you've envisioned a new project and they're all raring to go and they're totally open and they're curious and they have, you know, they have all of that. That's amazing. But a lot of times they're not there yet. And part of our work as practitioners is to help them get there, to be able to be in that spring energy and to bring that energy of spring to the new project. And so we're going to look for a couple of minutes at how to do that. But first, let me ask you this question and just take a moment to reflect on it and journal on it. What's your relationship to a new project? How do you approach new projects? How do you feel about them? And just take a moment on that one. How do you generally relate to new projects? The next question, what are some of the obstacles that sometimes come up for you when you're beginning to work on a new project or a new idea or a vision? What are some obstacles that can come up for you? Okay. So I want to share some of the obstacles that I have seen can come up that really hold clients, that hold people back from being in that spring energy when they start something new. So the first is, and this is a truth, that visioning and initiation and planting seeds start in the dark. Visioning, initiation, planting seeds, starting new things, actually, that when it really starts is in the dark. So just think about this for a moment. Hopefully I'm not getting too vague and esoteric. Like, hopefully, you know, you're seeing these connections with coaching. But I'll close the circle in a little bit. But I want you to just think about this for a moment. Think about early spring. It's still kind of wintry in early spring, right? Like around spring equinox. It can still be cold sometimes. It's not fully light yet. Think about dawn, right, which is like the beginning of a new day. It's not totally bright like high noon. It starts in the dark, right? There's a continuum. It's not like there's a hard end to the night and then it's fully light. The day starts when it's still kind of dark. Think about when we plant seeds. We plant them into the ground, where in the dark soil. Even think about when a baby is first born. When babies are first born, they don't have their full sight yet. They're still in the dark. They're partially blind. It takes them a little while to actually get the full range of their eyesight. So why am I sharing all of this with you? How does it relate? Because any time we begin something new, even if we have a ton of information around how to do it, even if we have a lot of resources, all of it, even with all of that, anytime we begin something new, we are beginning partially in the mystery. We're beginning partially in the mystery. Now, the mystery can be very exciting, right? The reason why new things start when it's still dark is because that's when there are no boundaries to things. That's when, you know, like we dream in the dark, right? There's more possibilities, right? So it's actually a magical and sacred thing to start something in the mystery, but what we want to remember as practitioners is that the mystery can also be scary sometimes. When we can't totally see, when we don't totally know how, when we haven't proven to ourselves already that we can, we don't totally trust then that we can, that the new project is going to happen, that the thing is going to come to fruition. I know that this is obvious, but oftentimes as coaches, when we support a client to initiate something new, we have done that thing before, so we're not in the mystery. So it's so important to understand that our client may be a little bit in the mystery and may have some fear around it and may be struggling around it a little bit, right? So just take a moment and just think about a situation where you've started something and you were still partially in the dark or in the mystery. So as I was sharing with Carolyn before, when people are scared of the dark, when our clients are scared of the dark, when they're scared of the mystery, they're going to want to focus on the how. They just want to be like, how do I get this done? And then they're going to find reasons why the how can't work, or they don't totally know the how, you know, all of that. And so as coaches, one of our jobs is to catch when our clients get scared of the dark, get scared of the mystery, want to go straight into the how, and help them first to commit to the what. The best way to execute, to discover the how, which is a lot of what strategizing is, and then to execute the how, right, how to create the thing that you've visioned, the best way to do those things is to first support your client to feel really committed to what they want to create, even if they don't fully know yet how to do it. So that's one piece, really getting that new things start in the dark and that there might be some fear around that. The second piece around this energetics of new things that might come up for clients as an obstacle that you want to be thinking about is the belief that it hasn't worked before, so why would it work now? Or it hasn't worked before, so it's not going to work this time. I've tried to lose weight before, and I haven't been able to lose weight, so it's not even worth it to do it again. I've tried to find an aligned romantic relationship before, but it's just never worked out the right way, so it's not going to happen again. Tried to do a preview workshop for my offerings before, and it failed miserably, so it's not gonna work this time, right? It hasn't worked, it didn't work, so it's not gonna work moving forward. Oftentimes, a client may be operating under this belief around the new thing that they're stepping into without even realizing that they're operating under it or partially, and then that creates obstacles and self-sabotage, and, you know, they don't end up doing it, they stall on it, they go into the archetype, resistance archetype of confusion or victimhood or whatever it is, and it's because there's just this little belief, right? It hasn't worked before, so this new thing isn't gonna work now. So if you sense that this is operating for a client, there are a couple of things that you can do. First of all, simply creating awareness around the limiting belief, right, is so important, right? Once someone can just have some awareness of like, oh, this is what's operating for me, this is what I've been scared of and I haven't even realized it, that can just open up so much. Another strategy is to have a conversation with your client around how this time it's going to be different. So, for example, I've tried to lose weight before, and many times before, and it's never worked, and so it's not going to work this time. Well, what's different now? What's different about your life? What's different about your circumstance? What's different about your desire? What's different about your commitment? What's different about your resources? What can we put in place so that it can be successful this time? What are the pitfalls that we want to be looking out for before they even happen? Where has it not worked last time that we need to tweak for this time? another strategy of the if the it hasn't worked before is rolling around in there for your client is to create awareness about what it actually takes to get things done. And what I mean by that is that so many of us, even when we know better, we fall into this perfectionist thinking of if things didn't work out the first time, it just means that I can't do it. It should work the first time. There's something wrong with me that it didn't. But the truth is, and I do a lot of normalizing with clients around this, is that it's actually normal for plenty of things to not work out the first time, right? The first sales conversation I had, I totally sucked at it. Now I teach sales conversations, right? So the more that we can, this is back to creating awareness, you know, like really normalize for our clients, then the easier it's going to be for them to get over this block of, well, it hasn't worked before, so it's not going to work now. And then the last strategy for, you know, helping with this particular belief is to reconnect your client back to their why, W-H-Y, right? The why behind the vision, the why behind the goal, the why behind the new thing. If you can reconnect them back to the why, then there's more inspiration, there's more confidence, there's more energy to move forward, even if it hasn't worked in the past. All right. I just want to check time here. Okay. I think the last piece for now around understanding the energetics of new things is has to do with the maiden. I think we've spoken a little bit about the maiden on one of our first calls. Remember, the maiden is so much about this energy of curiosity. The maiden is experimental. The maiden isn't attached to outcome. She doesn't have enough ego yet for things to be perfect or to look a certain way or, you know, for her to be scared to make a fool of herself. She is open. She laughs at her mistakes. She's not obsessed with perfection or even success. She's looking for fun, and she's curious about everything. The more that we can support our clients to be in this energy of the maiden, in many moments, but particularly when they're starting something new, then the more open they're going to be to moving forward, to having those bursts of energy, to, you know, not being so scared of making mistakes. The problem, of course, is that for many of us, the maiden or what's another gendered version of the maiden, you're the young one, right? Let's take gender out of it. Like the young one, for so many of us, got buried under history, right? Under our own histories. At some point, we were that open, energetic, curious one, willing to make mistakes, laughing into the future as we stumble towards what we want, right? But his, we, that for many of us, that part of ourselves got buried under history. We've disconnected from that part of us, from that energy inside of us, right? Maybe because we got criticized a lot as youngsters. Maybe because in our family there was so much this fear of survival that there wasn't any room or space for curiosity. Right, so many reasons why we may have disconnected from her or from that part of ourselves. And of course, though, what happens then is that, you know, when we get disconnected or that a part of ourselves gets, you know, buried under history, kind of comes up to bite us in the tush, you know, and again with the maiden, especially when we go to move towards new things. So take a moment and just consider this for yourself. What's the history that's been piled up on top of your maiden? Or what's the history that has buried your maiden a little bit? You can just jot down a couple things that come to mind. What's the history that's been buried on top of your maiden or your young one? And just next question to think about, how much access do you have to that one, that open, curious, laughing one that is not concerned with perfection or success, but is just laughing at her mistakes as she goes along, curious about everything? How much access do you have to her? So we want to understand this for our clients as well, and sometimes we may want to open up conversations, even if we don't use this language of the young one or the maiden, but sometimes if they are having trouble with new things, we may want to open up a conversation around connecting back to their curiosity, to their experimental selves, to their not-attached selves, to their self that's willing to make mistakes and not do it right. Okay, so I know that we went through that really quickly. I'm going to be sending you a worksheet with some more inner work questions on, you know, all of these different aspects that we've looked at by way of the energetics of new things. But let me pause here for a moment, and I'd love to hear just from one or two of you, what are you seeing for yourself that's important here? What are you taking away so far from this call around the energetics of new things? What feels important for you or for the work that you do with your clients? Star two. What's coming forward for you? Sophie.
Oh, hi, Joanna. I actually would like to ask for a bit of clarification around the autumn and the winter seasons, because I think you mentioned it, but I didn't clearly understand what the difference between autumn and winter was for the growth cycle.
Yeah, autumn is about harvest, right? So think about fall and autumn. We're going apple picking. You know, the corn is ready. The fruits are ready. And then even later in the autumn, more of the pumpkins and the gourds. So autumn is about harvest. It's about taking that pause after we've done all of the work of the planting work and then all of the work of the summer, of the nurturing, right? And seeing, okay, this is you know, celebrating for one thing. You know, this is what has grown so far, and then being able to enjoy it. Way too often, well, you know, we skip over the harvest. We just get straight to like, okay, I've just grown something. Now, what's the next thing to grow? But to get more into the flow of things, we want to also have that harvest time of just honoring what's been created, celebrating, enjoying, and then assessing, you know, what we want to keep from the project and then what we want to let go of as we move into that release of the winter phase. That make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. So winter is, it totally makes sense. But what was winter? I didn't really understand that one either.
Release and death.
Oh,
we'll do a whole call on that of supporting clients to release and let go. Because all the phases are really important. But yeah, think about winter as like, you know, the leaves are falling from the trees. It seems like everything in nature has died. Of course, it hasn't, but it's about releasing and letting go and going into silence and all of that. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Awesome. Good. Kelsey.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So what I'm taking away right now, first of all, the part about the seasons, I'm totally becoming more aware as I age and, you know, and my study of Chinese medicine. But as I age, it's harder and harder for me to go against the seasons. As a young one, I could sort of grow and be out there maybe in the fall and in the winter. And now I am just like, no way. Of the winter, literally, but also the winter of my business, et cetera, which happens to kind of align. So here we are heading towards spring, and I really feel the possibility of new growth, and I love that analogy. So what stops me, and I'm picking up on this for my clients as well, but me personally, is the resistance that I put up. And it's the same old resistance. I'm too busy. I don't have the time to create something new. I can't prioritize it. And obviously behind that is the fear of it's not going to be good enough. Nobody cares what I have to say. It should be perfect. But when I actually get started and just say, okay, I'm doing this, I set a timeline and I'm doing this, once I get started, the excitement and kind of the maiden energy grows a little bit and it becomes a little bit more playful. I can sort of let go of the fear. But I have to get started. So it is that inertia of getting started.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're bringing that up, because if we put this into a client context, you know, and this rings true for me as well and with my clients. So if we put it into a client context, then you know that part of your job when you're coaching someone is to hold a little bit of a tighter container for your client during the period when they're starting something new, because they need, because of that inertia that can happen until they really get started and they're into it, it's like you as the coach want to hold that for them, hold a little bit more accountability for them, you know, be a little bit more nurturing during that time to get them to start things. Once they start, then you know, then it is easier to continue. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad you brought that up. All right, I'll take one more and then we'll move. We already started moving into strategizing, but we'll move more firmly there. Heather.
Hey. So I'm curious. I haven't really been putting a lot towards looking at things as a seasonal cycle. But I'm seeing how personally, with this workshop that I'm working on getting out there, I keep pushing the date, and I'm starting to see how and why my idea of what I want to do with it is changing, like literally because the season is changing outside physically. So now I understand that anyone can choose to begin a new project at any time of the, you know, physical seasonal cycles of the year, but how often, what is the correlation that you've noticed in your experience?
Yeah. So so first I want to emphasize what you just said. Like when I talk about the seasons, I don't mean that your clients should be corresponding, you know, whatever they are. Like, you know, they can have three different projects going on and be in a different phase in each of those projects at the very same time, right? They might be in like the initiation of a business thing, but in harvesting of a romantic relationship, you know, so on and so forth. So that's, I want to make sure that I emphasize that, that I don't mean that there should be a correlation with the actual seasons. But that being said, we know, as you hear me say almost every week, energy follows energy, and the energy of nature, you know, it does impact us. You know, less so in today's modern world where we have all of these distancing mechanisms from nature and from the seasons and from the cycles, but it does impact us. And so, you know, I find, again, not that I'm not ever going to launch something in the winter. I absolutely sometimes launch things in the winter for sure, and I take breaks in the summer and all of that, but I do find that in a kind of higher level perspective, if I, during the winter time, if I allow myself to winter more, if I give myself more silent nights, don't go out as much, try to, you know, just like lessen the load a little bit, it does help with my overall productivity and accomplishment and creating results so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's different for everyone. I mean, I have some clients that absolutely will only start things on the new moon, you know, that I don't necessarily. I mean, I'm always paying attention to those cycles and initiating something on a new moon, but I tend to see it a little more loose than that.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. Okay. So, with an understanding of the energetics of new things and how clients can sometimes respond to new things and some of the different ways for us as practitioners to be holding a new project, let's move into then how do you strategize, right? So strategizing is such an important coaching skill. It can be so inspiring to support a client to articulate a vision and then to commit to that vision. But much of the time, I think really all of the time, our job as coaches doesn't end there. The next step after visioning is supporting a client to have a strategy in order to achieve, you know, to get to their goal, to get to their vision. So a couple of things that I want to share around this. So first, kind of just from a higher perspective, I really believe in the importance of the coach always holding a bigger plan and a strategy for their client. And what I mean by that is already from as early on as the enrollment conversation, the sales call, the sales process, the enrollment process that I have with a client, we're already articulating a rudimentary pathway that our work together is going to take. at the enrollment conversation, you, for those of you that have listened to my enrollment authentic enrollment conversations workshop, you know that the general formula for that is help your client figure out where they are now, activate their gap, you know, where are they now, then help them articulate their vision. And then the next step is to lay out the bridge between where they are now, where they're going to be, to lay out the step by step by step, without getting into too much detail, of how you're going to help support them get to where they want to go. This is not only a sales exercise. This is something that I take with me once I start working with my client. Obviously, it tweaks along the way, but I am always holding that bigger vision and the bigger strategy for the client. I always have a bigger plan, and I'm seeing a pathway for them to reach their goals, and I'm tracking the progress there. And I'm upholding not just the plan, but the vision for my client when they forget about it, right? It's so easy to get distracted by just like what comes up in the moment, right? And I totally help my clients work on and deal with what comes up in the moment or the new things that crop up. But I never lose sight of the fact, back to last week, that we're going to San Francisco, we're going to Portland, from the East Coast, whatever it is. A big mistake that I often see happens for coaches is that they may do the vision, they may identify what the vision is, where the end goal is, but then they in sessions they just end up getting caught up with the client bringing, I don't want to say distractions. They're not distractions. We want to take a look at those pieces, but the coach isn't holding the bigger picture. And then if that happens a couple of sessions in a row, your client can get really off track from what they want for themselves. So having a plan, having a strategy, having a pathway isn't just important in terms of the client executing, taking the action steps required. It's really important, for the big picture of how you as the coach are holding the container for the clients. Now, strategizing is probably the place the most where for some coaches and practitioners, we kind of run into this combination of coaching and consulting. If you are a business coach or a health coach or a relationship coach or, whatever, like a specific type of coach, even if it's not like the type of these big generalizations, chances are you're bringing some kind of wisdom, some kind of knowledge, like concrete tools to the table. And strategizing is one of the places where you're going to use them the most. The reason why I just bring this up is as we step into looking at strategizing is because what can oftentimes happen for coaches is that they go only into consulting mode when they're strategizing and they forget to coach. And that's when things can get off track, right? So you want to find that sweet spot for yourself between the consulting and the coaching, particularly when you're strategizing with clients and laying out a step-by-step plan. That's really what strategizing is laying out a plan for whether it's a big goal or just what they're going to accomplish next week, right? What are the action steps? What are the inner and the outer pieces to get them to where they want to go? So all that being said, let's talk next about this. All new things or visions or goals require a strong foundation. we know this. I don't have to explain this. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because here's where I want to go with it. When you begin strategizing with a client on a project or a goal or a vision or a whatever, one of the things that you as the coach want to be thinking about and bringing into the conversation is this question: what is the strong foundation that this project needs? What is the strong foundation that this project needs? So in other words, let's use, for example, I'll use something from business coaching, but this can be adapted to any kind of project that you're strategizing on. Let's say I have a client that wants to launch and fill and execute a big new offering, a big new program. Before we even get to the exact action steps to take in order to launch and fill this program, before we even get there, the first thing that I'm looking at, and if I know that this is fulfilled, I won't bring it to the client, but if I'm not sure, I'll bring this question to the client, is what is the foundation that this project needs? So for example, what is the time required, and does my client have the time that's required? So anytime I start working with a new client, I always ask them, how much time do you have to devote to your business? That is really going to dictate how we strategize and how we plan. Maybe a foundation that's needed if this person is a parent, what's your childcare situation like? It's a foundation that launching this project needs. Another foundational piece, launching a big project, I'm going to want to know, how many people are you in front of, right? Do you have access to people, or do we even just have to start first getting you bringing new people to your community, right? That's going to dictate so much of the plan, so much of the strategy. Do you know how to lead an enrollment conversation? If not, we need to plan for that, right? So what are the foundations that this project needs? And does the client have those foundations, right? If they're working towards a romantic relationship, before you even get into strategizing, okay, maybe they'll do online dating and put on an online profile and blah, 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 all those different things that we traditionally think about strategy, maybe a strong foundation is, first, do they have a certain level of self-love, right, that will even allow them to open themselves up for dating? Maybe another strong foundation is, do they have healthy boundaries, or do those need to be worked on first? Do they have the time to date? Are they one of those workaholics that distract themselves from dating by working so much? Is that something that needs to be worked on? Have they released and mourned their last relationship, or is that part of the foundation that needs to be set before they can get to the online dating? So take a moment and think about, when you work with clients, what is a typical new project that you'll work on with a client? Just take a moment and write that down. What's a typical new project you might work on with a client? And then just take a moment and jot down the foundational pieces that are required before you even get to all of the action step type strategies. What are some of the foundations that you're going to be looking for? And if they're not there, that you're going to want to cultivate and work in to the strategy. And sometimes when I'll start working with a client, if they don't really have time in their schedule, you know, the first couple of weeks before we get to the quote-unquote building their business, the first session or two, we might be just working on how they can create more time, how they can get more childcare, how they can get more support, what do they need to shift in their job so that they can get a half day during the week, or, you know, whatever it is. We can't just jump into, you know, offering their offerings and bringing on clients. All right, next thing I want to talk about briefly are the elements of a good strategy. You probably know all of these, so I'm just going to go through them quickly. So every good strategy needs a clear goal, right? We spoke about that last week. That's visioning. Always want a vision first, get a clear an articulated goal. That goal may change as you execute, that's fine, but you want that. Next element of a good strategy is a due date for the goal. By when do you want to accomplish this? What's the timeline? Next element of a good strategy, I call this like the inner element, is what is the, how do you want to feel as you go through this journey, as you execute, right? So often we're only focused on getting to the goal, but really most of our lives are spent getting to the goals. And like, what? How do we want to feel as we execute, as we get there, right? So what's the feeling that we want to have as we move through our strategy? Next element of a good strategy is, what are the markers, right? So back to last week, remember I was talking about the road trip. Start in New York, end in San Francisco. Well, part of a good strategy is knowing, okay, on day one, we're going to drive. I know nothing about geography. This isn't going to be correct, but we're going to drive to Pittsburgh, and it's, you know, that will take us one day, and then we're going to stop in Pittsburgh and stay overnight, and then from there, we're going to drive to whatever, right? What are the markers to let us know that we've made progress? Where, you know, it's almost like, where are the mini goals that let us know that we are moving towards our goal, and that give us a moment to celebrate, right, and to take it in. Ah, I got partway there. We made it to Pittsburgh, right? We can sleep now. Let's stay at a great hotel, whatever it is, right? And then the last element of a really good strategy are baby steps to get you from marker to marker to marker to marker. So this, thinking about it in this way, the clear end goal, the timeline, the feeling that you want to have as you move through, the markers, the kind of bigger milestones to get you there, and then celebrating when you get to those milestones. Celebration, as we looked at already, so important. And then the baby steps from milestone, marker to marker. If you have all of that, again, all of it's, you know, it will change and shift as you start on the road trip. That's okay. But this will really serve as a guiding light and help you track your client, hold space for your client to move towards what they want. I am a Virgo, And for those of you that are either Virgos yourself or follow astrology, you'll get what I say next. Like, for as spiritual and out there as I can be, I'm also really grounded, and I like to be really organized. And strategizing is a place to get really organized. And because I'm kind of a crazy Virgo person, I want to share with you a little bit about, to just get deeper into the details here of what I do for myself, and then what I also help my clients with. And you know, if this resonates for you, this may be a little crazy for you, it may not resonate, you know, don't pick it up if you don't want it, but if it does, you know, I can just tell you it's highly effective. I would not have been able to build the business that I have today without these strategizing skills. And same goes for my clients. So I blueprint. I really feel like a blueprint is an important part of a strategy. So what that looks like when I'm working with clients is we'll lay out all of the pieces that I just mentioned, and then we'll either together, usually the first time we'll do this together, once my clients learn how to do this, I'll just ask them to do it on their own, and then they'll share it with me. I ask them to create a blueprint of their strategy. So what the blueprint is let's say, again, I'll put in the business context. Let's say they want to fill a new program and the timeline is by June 1st. And, you know, we've looked at the feeling they want to have and we've found the milestones. You know, one milestone is to get the sales page up and running. And maybe another milestone is to do individual outreach to everybody they know, and another milestone is to put together a preview teleclass, right? And then from there, we've gotten into all of the baby steps, right? So to get to that first milestone of having a sales page, we'll do a baby step of, you know, writing a first draft of the sales page. That's even, we'll even break it down smaller than that, right? But let's say one of the baby steps is writing a first draft, and another baby step is editing and writing a second draft, and another baby step is finding the graphic designer, and all of that, right? We'll lay all of those pieces out. And again, to varying degrees, some clients know what the baby steps are. They're seasoned entrepreneurs. It's not their first rodeo. Others, you know, will get more details. Just depends, right, on whatever we're doing. So then from there, I'll ask them to create a blueprint. And what the blueprint is basically like an accountability tool, and it's strategizing and accountability tool. So blueprint is, I'll have them take a look at that bigger strategy, and then I'll say, just focus on the next month. What are the goals for the next month with this strategy that we've just laid out? And then look at each of the 4 weeks of the month, and what are the baby steps that are going to happen on week one? What are the baby steps that are going to happen on week two? What are the baby steps that are going to happen on week three? What are the baby steps that are going to happen on week four? So that they lay out the steps for each week of the month. Don't do it for more than 1 month because you'll get overwhelmed and then just check out. But if your client or you can have this plan with what they're doing each week, then what happens is when they get to their work week, they're going to spend way less time being overwhelmed, not quite sure what they should be doing at any given time. Like they have their intentions set for the week. They have a plan. They have a strategy. They have a guidepost. Now, again, I'm a crazy Virgo person, so I take it further than this. Some of my clients like to go there with me. Some of them don't like to do this, so I don't do it with them. I do it for myself. So what I do is at the beginning of every week, I look at all of the baby steps that I have laid out for that week. Let's say it's week two of the month. I look at everything I had laid out at the beginning of the month for week two, and I assign each of those baby steps a day of the week that I'm going to do those steps in. I take it even further. At the beginning of each day, I look at, okay, what are the steps that I have assigned for today? What time am I going to do each thing? And again, that might be too extreme for some of you, but what I've found for myself and for a lot of my clients is having a matrix like this, having this blueprint with this strategy, it just allows, it takes away all of the, again, the overwhelm of what do I do, or I'm not sure, the vagueness, or I have so long to get it done, you know, all of that. But mostly it takes away the overwhelm, which is like, oh my God, there's so many steps and I can't do them. Well, yeah, there are a lot of steps to get to your ultimate goal, but this week you just have these five steps, mini steps. And the baby steps shouldn't take more than 30 to 60 minutes each. Okay. There's one more big piece that I wanted to share with you today. I'm just going to go for no, I'm not going to go for it because I'm sure there's questions. We'll talk about it next week. I'm going to do some modeling for you. So I'm going to take you through a visioning and maybe we'll get into strategy session. I'll ask for a volunteer and then we'll break down everything that I did so I can really kind of model for you the entire process. But what we'll do is we'll start next week. I wanted to talk to you about natural accomplishment rhythms. Different people have different accomplishment rhythms. You want to be clear on what those are. But I will pause there for today and take a moment and just write down what is it that you're really taking for yourself from our call today? What's important for you? And I'd love to hear, please post takeaways in the group, but I'd love to hear from some of you before we wrap for today. What are you taking away and what questions can I answer for you? Star two. What are you seeing as important around new things and strategizing or visioning? What questions do you have? Anyone got anything? I'd love to hear from at least one of you before we wrap for today. Oh, here we go. All right. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. How you
Hi.
Doing? So lots to think about for me today. A lot of takeaways. I think because I'm just really starting in the coaching world, I don't believe that I may have been planning enough with my clients, and so I was just kind of going off the cuff, off of, like, you know, what I would intuitively pick up for them because I'm very intuitive and I'm a spiritual coach and an acupuncturist. And so I think it really laid it out for me that I need to do the roadmap with them. So, like, you know, sitting down and talking about, okay, like, we have this big, you know, well, I like to call it a challenge, not a problem, but like a challenge or like a goal you want to meet. And like one of my clients, she wants to divorce her husband. Okay, but she's got this baby with him and a home with him and all these attachments with him, and she's trying to break free. So I need to actually literally reevaluate with her on my coaching call tomorrow with her about, well, what, you know, what's your roadmap? What's your plan, right?
Yes. Yes. If you can create that overarching strategy, that roadmap,
mm-hmm.
You know, there may be side things that come up along the way that you don't follow it again or it may shift, but it'll give
right.
you markers to work towards instead of randomly showing up each week for the session and just seeing what's
exactly.
up for her around it that week. That is exactly like ding, 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 ding. Yes, that is exactly one of the main pieces that I'm hoping everybody is taking from this call. And, you know, I'll just give an example. This has happened earlier today on a client call. You know, remember I was saying before, it's not just about how the client executes, but it's us as coaches, how we hold it. I have a client that came to session, and we've started to work on her next marker, which is she's creating a new group program, and she's working towards preview teleclasses and all of that. And on her pre-call form, she had, you know, what she wanted to discuss for the day is getting over some resistances around putting together the preview teleclass. All fine and good, but because I'm holding the bigger picture for her, the strategy, when we got on the call, I said, we'll absolutely spend the most of this call looking at this resistance and moving you towards the preview workshop. But, I haven't heard from you in a week or two on just, like, she had an assignment to just be taking small actions every day to bring in some more money immediately. So how is that going, right? Because I know that she can't move towards all of this wider reach and, this bigger program unless she also has that foundation of bringing on just more, like, smaller, clients as opposed to this group thing along the way. So she has that security, right? So we want that roadmap. And then as the coaches, we want to really be holding and tracking it.
Okay, yeah. See, I wasn't doing that. And I could tell she was just trying to reschedule appointments with me, and there was, like, massive resistance, and she was probably like, well, what the hell? I'm not really, like, getting anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was trying to call her out on it with being nice, but I was like, I'm just going to spin it a different direction tomorrow and be like, you know what? I think we just need to reevaluate. Let's come up with a plan together, something that feels good for you, right?
Exactly. Come up with an overarching strategy and then start working towards that.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. This is so helpful.
Good, good, good. I'm so glad. You're welcome. Carolyn.
Am I there? Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think along the same lines is that level of blueprinting and road mapping. So I'm excited to actually try this out with my partner on a bigger, for myself. You can do it for somebody else. And I can actually even do more with my clients to even get better results, but even for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I live by it. I mean, I teach it because I do it. I've seen the results from it. Yeah. It can be revolutionary. Not for everyone, but if you are good with structure like that, it can be really revolutionary. Good. I'm excited.
Yeah. I definitely need more of that. Yeah. Yeah. No, this is exciting. So yeah, that is like, wow, she just gave me permission. Thank you.
Awesome. So happy to hear it. Good. Brooke.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
I had a question. Thanks. I had a question about clients who might be coming to you from a place of overwhelm and exhaustion and looking to, renew. Do you have any words of wisdom about strategizing when maybe the goal that needs to be tackled first is rest and recovery?
Yeah. Yeah. That happens a lot, right? Remember even just I've mentioned once or twice, sometimes our clients are starting in the winter, not in the spring. We can't get to those new bursts of energy and outer accomplishments until we help them get the space and the rest or the release, all of that, right? We do want them to have excitement around going into winter. People tend to think of it as like, ugh, I'm not ahead enough to do the other, right? And so we do actually want to create that sense of spring, even if they're in the winter in a way, so that they can be excited to take the rest, right? So I think the first thing is to create awareness around that, right? Mm-hmm. And just create awareness around how vital the rest and the rejuvenation is and how that's actually the strong start and the strong foundation that's required for them to then move towards whatever, that you're helping them move towards. So to first create awareness around it and then have a conversation around their beliefs around that. Maybe that's required too, right? Like, what are their limiting beliefs around the rest and taking the time? What is their ego telling them about that? What are their fears around that? And then also look at, like, really, what are the benefits? What is it that their bodies really want, their souls want, all of that? And then once you can create that buy-in and that investment and that excitement, right, that maiden energy, the curiosity to go there, then they're going to be so much more open to strategize around it, right? And then, depending on what it is, I'm sure some strategy around the rest is looking at when they go to sleep and how they can start shifting that, or, you know, when do they take time off, or are they eat, when are they eating, you know, whatever the things are that you look at to help them rest and strategize, and then to start creating markers around that. You know, the other important thing that I kind of built into what I mentioned but I wasn't explicit about is that the important thing about strategy is that we don't have people change everything at once. That's why we have those markers, right? So you may not have them change their sleep time and their work habits and their eating habits and getting a massage every week, like, all at once. This is these are the markers over X amount of weeks or whatever it is that they're moving toward. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's really wonderful. Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Well, our homework, you'll get over the next few days a homework sheet, and then I'll also give you, like, some blueprinting templates that I have that you can use or adapt or whatever it is you want for yourself. If you're working with a coaching partner, continuation from last week, hopefully you've already had one visioning call. So this week, move into the second partner visioning call. You may start folding in some strategizing, energetics of new things, see where you want to go with that. And then when we meet next week, like I said, we're going to look at the natural accomplishment rhythms. Different people have different rhythms. You want to work that and understand that, have them understand their rhythm, and then work that into strategy. And then I'll be doing some model coaching for you, which is always kind of a favorite. I can learn so much when coaching is modeled for you, but I won't just model it. Then we're going to spend time breaking down the different skills and tools that I used. Please continue to post your takeaways in the Facebook group. If you have any questions, let me know. Thank you for your presence and your energy today. I'm wishing you all a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.